Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X Studios in North Carolina, it's time for Carolina Connections, the radio show where business leaders connect.
Hello, welcome back to Carolina Connections. This is your host, Anne Revelle-Petcher. I'm in the studio today with a really amazing group of people. I'm really excited to introduce some people who are impacting the future of what will happen with technology and business in our region. And I'm going to start by introducing Steve Rao, who is the councilman-at-large for the town of Morrisville and the director of business development at Alphanumeric. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Good morning, all of you. So pleasure to be here.
So glad you could join us.
Thank you so much.
I'm also introducing Patrick Turner, who's the chief technology officer at Small Footprint. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, Anne. Thanks for having us today.
Glad you could come on over. And we also have Emily Baronello, who's with SAS. She's the senior director of the education practice. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So glad you could join us. If you are in the city of Raleigh, or actually if you're in North Carolina and you're in the technology industry, you've heard of SAS. You've certainly driven by SAS a million times and think, what an amazing campus that is. Can you just give us, maybe for the people who aren't quite so technology savvy, what does SAS do?
Sure. SAS is actually a leader in the business analytics software and services space. And so really what that means is we help make sense out of vast amounts of data. And whether that's in different industries such as healthcare or state and local government or education or banking, we help you figure out what is happening with that data and help you make decisions with it.
How do you do that? You're not actually capturing that data, are you?
No, we actually enable our customers to be able to use our software to actually do that on site. So, for instance, if you are Amazon and want to be able to figure out what your customers' buying habits are, you can install the SAS software and be able to perform the analytics necessary to figure out who are your best customers and how do you want to market to them and how do you want to communicate with them.
Wow, that's a broad range of companies who might use your product.
It is. It is very, very broad.
Well, you are specifically committed to the education practice within SAS. How did SAS decide they wanted to have an education practice?
So SAS was actually born out of education. I'm not sure if everyone knows that.
No.
Hopefully the local folks do. But we were actually born out of a data project regarding agriculture data out of NC State University.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. So our roots are in education, and it's something we've always focused on. Our CEO, Dr. Jim Goodnight, believes that education is really the forefront of what we need to be focusing on to make sure that we have a good pipeline of talent and the right skills coming out, both to support the students and the careers that they want to have, and to help support our customers and the needs that they have for analytical talent.
So what is it you do within this practice then?
So we actually focus on a couple different areas. We focus on K-12, helping school districts improve learning. We also focus in higher ed to provide teaching and learning resources to help.
So this is not just here in the triangle.
Oh, no, this is worldwide. We just actually kicked off a new initiative for the U.S. where we are providing SAS software at no cost to the university market so that we can try to affect that that skills gap out there and really put the software in everyone's hands, whether it's new students, community college students, all the way to adult learners that are looking to make career changes.
Wow. Okay. So you're essentially putting SAS software into the university system so that the students can learn how to utilize the analytic software in this pre-professional stage
of their life. Yes, and we're working really hard to make sure there are real-world examples. So a little bit about what we were talking about before, we want to make sure that we're putting the software in their hands in a capacity that they're working in a team with collaboration to learn how to solve problems, learn how to take data, and figure out what you've done, what you can do, what you could even do better.
Could you give us an example? Do you have any experiences that might be something that people can relate to?
Sure. I'll actually use one in education because that's near and dear to my heart. So in higher ed, there are a lot of grants that are given out, student loans.
Sure.
And we were working with a particular university that had been giving out about $5,000 grants to particular students over a 10-year period. They actually used our analytical software to create some models and find out, okay, what are the types of students we're giving these grants to? Are they utilizing the grants? Are they accepting? Is it making a difference? And it was quite fascinating when they were able to look at the 10 years worth of data and find out that a lot of the students they were giving the funds to were not needing the funds or utilizing them.
Oh, you're kidding.
Therefore, a huge opportunity to go after an entirely new group of students to try to figure out, well, if we're not capturing these students, then perhaps there are new students out here who wouldn't have thought about being first-time college students. Mm-hmm. If we were to give them this grant, they would be more likely to enroll.
Wow, that's really interesting. Okay, that's a great example from how it's being used at the university level. Mm-hmm. You also talked about K-12.
Mm-hmm.
How is it being used in that environment?
So SAS is actually being used in many, many different state education agencies in K-12. So if you think about North Carolina DPI, they are charged with doing quite a lot of state and federal reporting, lots and lots of data. If you think about the number of local education agencies just in North Carolina, it's well over 100. You think about all the student data that they have to report on.
Including tests.
Including assessments and whatnot. And this has to roll to the state level. So the states are doing a lot of reporting and analytical work for the districts themselves.
Okay.
And so it's quite a lot of hefty data work, if you will. However, it's making it much easier by visualizing this data for K-12. So when you have a lot of folks looking at the test scores and how are students doing in particular algebra courses, there's been a large effort in K-12 to really visualize that data so that the policymakers can get in there quickly and figure out what decisions they should make. Should we continue this program? Is it making a difference? Is it not making a difference? And so that is really, really helping on the K-12 side.
How do you think this is going to impact the actual outcomes of the education?
That's an interesting point as well, because a lot of what we do is to evaluate the outcomes.
Okay.
So you definitely jumped right there, is that we want to be able to evaluate the programs that are put into place, especially if it's taxpayer money.
Yep.
Is it working? Can we do better in a certain area? Perhaps it isn't. Sometimes you won't get the best results, but you'll get information that will help you figure out how you can improve the program. And help more students. So a good example in K-12 is there's a lot of data showing that algebra courses by the eighth grade will have a huge impact on STEM degrees and students pursuing certain areas. So, you know, that's an interesting data point that folks may or may not have been aware of a couple years ago. So we'll continue to look at that in terms of outcomes and what sort of response to interventions we can put out there to help students.
Yeah, that's a real turning point for students, isn't it? Algebra.
Yes.
I mean, and that move from algebra to the next level of whatever you happen to take next in your math. And that seems to be a big disconnect, I think. The math specifically.
Absolutely. That's something that that a lot of folks have seen in the data, that if they're not exposed to it early enough or they're not actually taking the full Algebra 1 course by a certain time period, that they will be struggling as they enter college. And that's something that if we can affect, we certainly will. And to that point, SAS actually has an algebra course included in our no-cost online curriculum, which is called Curriculum Pathways. So,
Whoa, let's talk about that a little bit more. You have an online curriculum.
Yes.
And who uses this?
And so, actually, this has been granted to the entire United States about 11 years ago now, I believe, at no cost. And so this is something we've been developing for 15-plus years.
Wow.
And the idea behind this was really to bring technology and some additional resources to the teachers' fingertips. So it is not meant to replace any of the curriculum. It is meant to enhance and to provide students with a new and exciting way to learn. So if a student is not responding to a certain way of teaching, perhaps a video might work.
Yeah.
And so we have this tool called Curriculum Pathways, and it's mapped to Common Core and the state standards out there. So it's really easy for teachers to be able to go look something up and see, is there an additional resource or something that could help me in the classroom today.
That's really cool. So STEM education is a big topic these days. What kind of role are you playing maybe locally in STEM?
So we're trying to do as much as we possibly can in terms of STEM. We work with the Triangle High Five districts in terms of working with them on the math summit and reading readiness. So we are working.
Thank you for the reading readiness, by the way. We've had so much focus lately on STEM. It seems like we're not getting enough of the balance of the liberal arts. So I appreciate that.
And there are some mobile apps out there as well that focus on reading for the younger levels. So just like we focus on math and eighth grade algebra, we focus on reading in the third grade. And so we've got a great mobile app that allows you to record your voice reading to children so that, you know, you can go on a trip and come back and your child is listening to you still read with your voice and they are able to actually follow the words online.
So
it is
really
a lot of fun. I'd really recommend folks go out there and check it out.
And what's the name of the app?
The Read Aloud app.
Okay, great.
Make sure I got the right thing there.
I assume that's available both for the Apple platform as well as the Android platform.
It is.
Excellent.
And there are multiple other apps out there. If you search under SAS and Curriculum Pathways, I won't go through all of them.
We could be here all day, right?
We could be there all day. That's why I want to make sure I got the right name there. There are multiple apps out there, including for math, again, that can help younger students as well.
Great. So SAS is really getting involved at the very beginning of the education, going right through college. And I assume you probably have some on-site, and this, I don't even know this for sure, but I'm assuming that given everything SAS does on campus, you have some ongoing curriculum for your own employees. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. We have a great training group internally, which I think is fantastic. They really do promote movement within the company if you want to have a change into a technical career or something else. And so even though I'm not a SAS programmer, I do have the ability to go down that track and learn the technology.
That's
so
really
I could
cool.
actually be doing this data work as well.
I got to say, one of the coolest places to work, I think, probably in the entire country. Got to be.
We are very lucky.
You are. If somebody wanted to learn a little bit more about what you're doing, how would they reach out to you?
We have a lot of information that is on the website. So if you go out to www.sas.com and look for Analytics U, there is information specific out there for higher ed. Curriculum Pathways is specific to more of the mid grades. And then our mobile apps are meant for the younger ages. So there is a plethora of information out there about education on our website. And if folks need more information, there are many buttons they can click to contact us directly, and we'll help where we can.
Excellent. Great. We're going to come back to talk to you in just
Thank
a minute.
You.
But I'm going to scoot over here and have a conversation with Patrick Turner. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so you guys over at Small Footprint, why don't you first tell us a little bit about what Small Footprint is?
Sure. So we're a software development outsourcing company, and we are based in Winston-Salem, so a couple hours from here. Drove over this morning. And so we really work with our software partners and customers to help accelerate innovation through software technology.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we're all based around software, and so everyone.
What kinds
on our
of
team,
things have you done? Can you name a project?
Sure. So we really kind of two sides to our business. One is we work a lot with software product companies. Especially when they're smaller and trying to get started and trying to get to market,
mm-hmm.
And then help them through those first few years of just trying to build that innovative software to help get out there. The other side of our business is really working with what we would call enterprise customers, helping them to automate business processes.
Oh, cool. Like who might fall into that category?
Sure. So a lot of companies around the Carolinas. So we work with, for example, the Fresh Market and helping them to actually innovate and to help them to work with their vendors, for example, to automate processes that have been very manual in the past.
Okay.
Companies like Hanes Brands, helping them, again, with their business-to-business initiatives. So, for example, we recently built a platform to help them to actually build those custom uniforms online. So they're able to actually play with the guys that are a little bit better known in that industry, like the Nikes and and companies that have those tools, but they needed those to really be able to innovate in the marketplace. And of course, they need to be able to have partners who could come in and help them figure out what they needed to do to get that job accomplished.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And then actually go out and build the software.
Well, so you guys have recently become really involved in workforce development. Why?
Well, you know, it's really it's a simple economic situation for us. We need good, talented people, just like SAS, to keep our business growing.
Uh-huh.
And we've had tremendous growth over the last several years. But to keep that going, we know that we need to have highly skilled employees with the company to make that happen. And As we've grown, it's become harder and harder to find those people. And this is a trend. You know, one of the great things about the Carolinas is that this demand is all around the Southeast, especially here in North Carolina.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so we're really sitting in a group of people that are having a hard time across the board finding those good qualified people. So really, we kind of ended up, especially me personally, looking at workforce development as a challenge and really an opportunity for us as a company and as a state, knowing that there's this high demand. And so started looking around a couple of years ago to try to figure out, you know, why we're not generating these people, right? We have a lot of talented people. We have the schools are full of kids that are learning. There's plenty of emphasis on STEM, and I guess now we call it STEAM education.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, I think that's the new term.
Oh, what's the A?
I think the A is arts, so they're throwing arts in there,
really?
Which is great. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we'll get some writers out of this finally.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the first thing that I discovered when I started looking around was just that that nobody was aware that there was this huge opportunity for software engineering positions in the Carolinas. I think everyone assumed all of those jobs had gone overseas. And it's interesting, we actually own a development center in Romania,
right.
Primarily because that's where the skilled talent is today. And we, like a lot of other companies, probably any company that's using software to innovate, has development globally. But quite honestly, a lot of those jobs need to be here in North Carolina. In fact, there's about 1,000 open positions today.
I was going to say, what is the demand like in general? 1,000 open positions today for programmers?
Absolutely, for software engineers.
Software engineers specifically.
So it's specifically that job. I think in IT overall, there's around 4,000 or 5,000 open positions. But specifically the kind of skills that we're looking for software engineering, there's about 1,000 open positions. And that's been the case for at least the last 4 or 5 years.
And this is for what kinds of companies? Not just developer companies like Small Footprint, but for...
Well, you know, that's kind of the cool part is I think part of the awareness issue that I found is that people either thought the jobs were overseas or that those jobs were really these boring heads down looking at a green screen all day. And that's really couldn't be further from the truth. And you have jobs ranging from working for companies like SAS that are large, you know, international companies that have thousands and thousands of developers on staff, all the way down to startup companies that need just 3 or 4 really good people to get started. And that's really the fun part. So whatever type of environment that you like to work in, whatever culture you're looking for, there's probably a company in North Carolina that has that culture that needs software engineering as a skill set in their company. So it's really, you know, the sky's the limit and the options are wide for the kind of place that you might like to work and the kind of job that you might like to have and even the kind of software that you might want to build.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So what is being done to build awareness? Are you doing this by yourself? I mean, how is this all coming together?
Well, you know, there's a lot of initiatives across the state that are going on. And I think at least one of the things that I've seen, North Carolina New Schools, which is a really great organization, it's also based here in the Triangle, that's helping schools really with all of STEM education. They've gotten very involved in helping with especially secondary schools to start to raise awareness.
Okay.
I have personally gotten involved and with some volunteer work on some initiatives specifically in the Triad where we're from. And so there's really a lot of different things going on. But as we're seeing, what I'm finding, especially as we talk about what the real opportunities are, it's the great news is that it seems like everyone that I run across wants to get involved and realizes the opportunity and is more than happy to jump in. So, you know, you have, for example, in Davidson County Valley Academy, which is a high school that's a STEM focus. It's a career academy. So they're really focused on kids coming out ready to go into the workforce with a 2-year degree.
Okay, cool.
And they're now in the process of adding a 4th career path for software engineering.
Hmm.
So once they realized what the opportunity was, they said, yeah, let's jump in and do that. And they realized it's a great opportunity for a rural area like Davidson County that has historically been textile and furniture manufacturing driven. And those jobs, of course, are going away, especially with advanced manufacturing. Those jobs are changing. So they're focused on those changing jobs, but also focused on software engineering as an example.
It's really interesting you think about when to really capture the imagination of someone who might ultimately go into software engineering, for example, in all of the IT or all the technology-related degrees or work that there is out there. What is really an ideal time to capture someone's imagination?
You know, I think that as early as possible. I mean, we all know, you know, everyone has either has a little kid or seen a little kid pick up an iPad and become fascinated with what's going on there.
Yeah.
And so I think as early as possible as you can you help them understand what's happening under the covers. And they don't necessarily have to come out and be programming Java when they're six, but if they can even start to understand sort of the constructs that right. makes those applications work, it's a good thing.
Sure.
And there's a lot of great programs. For example, the Hour of Code from code.org, which we have used that program with in some of the schools that we've done some volunteer work. A lot of it is just a matter of helping people who think that it's just magic. I realize that yeah, maybe it's a little bit magical,
yeah,
but really
there's people behind this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's some basic constructs that go into software programming that anyone can understand.
Right.
And it helps them maybe to not feel like it's quite so untouchable.
Well, I think even actually the opportunities are boundless. We, back when I was just focusing on doing public relations, we used to, every new employee, the first thing that they were required to do when they were issued their desktop, this is before they were issued laptops, when they were issued their desktop, they were required to take it apart and put it back together again. And this was in public relations. This was in the 90s, and they were like, whoa. I learned to write in college. I didn't learn to put together computers, but it gave them a sense of what their clients we're facing every single day. So I think that every aspect of business can really help their employees get to the next level and learn to love something about the technology industry.
Absolutely. And I think that's why programs like the Hour of Code are so important. So, for example, when we ran the Hour of Code at Valley Academy, every kid in the school participated.
Mm-hmm.
Because regardless of what you go into, whether you're going to be running an automated machine on a plant floor or working in the healthcare environment, you're going to be touching software.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're probably going to want it to do something that it doesn't do today. Mm-hmm. And if you have a basic understanding of how software gets put together, which mm-hmm. you can do in an hour, then it's going to help you with your job. And I really believe that 90% of the careers that people go into, having that basic understanding of software development is going to help them down
Absolutely.
The road.
Certainly in terms of forward movement for their career.
Absolutely.
So outside of software development, what other kinds of skills are people looking for in the technology industry right now?
Well, I think, you know, there's really across the board. And if you're looking at the Carolinas, we have data centers all over the place.
Sure.
So there's certainly a lot of need for folks who can work with system administration and work in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have a lot of business-related skills that are required. So a lot of what we do, especially with our team based in Winston-Salem, is actually go out and work with our customers and start to learn and understand what their real business needs are.
Cool.
A lot of the mistakes that we make building software is when we don't actually understand what our customers are trying to do. So really, the ability to have that broad base knowledge is important. So I have a liberal arts undergrad, which sounds crazy because I was a professional software developer coming out of the gates.
Yep.
But I think the reason that helped me is because I do have a broad understanding of the way the world works.
Exactly.
And as a result, I was able to connect my innate technical skills
mm-hmm.
with the understanding of the way the world works, so I could sit down with people who might own a business process and have a better chance of actually understanding what they do. So I do think having a well-rounded education is important to be in the industry.
Yep.
And it makes a real difference. It certainly has in my career. And I think all the folks that we work with, the ones who excel are the ones who aren't just good at the technology,
exactly.
but also understand whatever that particular business need is and have the communication and collaboration skills to be able to drive that forward. And really, you know, we like to say we hire for those skills first and for the technical second. We can train just about anybody on the technical side, but it's really hard to find folks who can actually communicate well and work with others to be able
Exactly.
to figure out what we're trying to accomplish.
Exactly. Well, if somebody has some more questions about small footprint specifically, how do they get more information?
Sure. The easiest way is certainly to go to smallfootprint.com. We have a lot of information about the company there and, of course, all of our contact information. And anybody that would like to learn more about the initiatives that we're working on can certainly reach out. My profile is there, and you can contact me through that website.
Super.
But really, we feel like the more is the merrier. So as many folks who are wanting to get involved and help with the opportunity, the better.
Great. Sounds super. Okay, you hang on for a minute. We're going to come back and chat with you again
Thanks.
In just a minute. We're going to move over here and talk to Steve Rao. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good
all
morning.
Of
you want to talk about somebody who's got that sort of well-rounded background. Steve is the Director of Business Development at Alpha Numeric, which is a technology company. You
yes.
want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. We're a global, today a global technology company. We were founded 31 years ago by Darlene Johns.
Wow.
And 5 years ago, Harvey Braswell, who was an original guy at Perot Systems and EDS with Ross Perot and his team, bought about our company. Uh-huh. And we've really turned from going from being completely state government company with 90% of our business being hardware to today a global company with offices in England, Barcelona, Montreal, and but 85% of our business is services, and less than 10% of our business is government. Even though we have solutions we can offer the government, but we had to transition our business, and it's quite exciting. So we're now growing at 700 employees globally.
Wow!
When I joined the company 4.5 years ago, we were just 120.
Holy smoke!
So it's been a real successful turnaround, and I want to thank my colleagues in the IT industry because we're all on the same team creating lots of jobs, and so I bring that perspective,
And you mentioned the services that you're providing. What are they?
The primary momentum with our services is around global help desk in pharmaceutical and biotech companies clinical applications. So we do a lot of that at Barcelona, Montreal for global leaders in pharma. We do a lot of IT outsourcing in terms of the fundamental blocking and tackling. So not so much application development or software development, but managing IT for companies and provisioning a lot of IT through the cloud.
Okay.
Through services. So we have all kinds of services through partnerships, DR as a service, telephony as a service. So, that's where the service growth is.
And you're, of course, very interested in a well-educated workforce to help you in that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the hardest things Harvey Braswell and, Steve Chase, our VP of Global Sales and Marketing, mm-hmm. have is, finding the right people to do the job. In our industry, it's networking, engineering, finding those Cisco engineers, and when you find them, how do you keep them? One guy's obviously figured out, Dr. James Goodnight, but not all of us are SaaS. And how do you keep those people producing? And
right.
It's a big problem even for the state of North Carolina because people come into the state, but they can't match the salaries of what they're getting paid in the private sector.
Sure.
So we're seeing this challenge with state implementations across the board.
Interesting, interesting. You wear another hat as a councilman at large in the town of Morrisville. How'd you get involved in city council?
Well, it's an interesting story. I'm from West Virginia, which is a really political state, and many years ago I did some lobbying work and I got to know Joe Manchin. At that time he was a state senator and I worked on his campaign when he ran for governor in 96. He's a close friend. He lost and then years later became a secretary of state and then became the governor, and now he's a United States senator.
Wow.
So I learned a lot of my politics working with Manchin and Rockefeller and other leaders of the legislature in West Virginia. Was brought here from the IT industry to come to Raleigh. We had our first child here. Parents immigrated from West Virginia here. And then Tom Murray, who went to the legislature, decided, he won. There was an open seat in the council. And so Tom and a few other leaders of the community said, why don't you just run for office? And I had run for county commissioner and lost a close race to Commissioner Gurley. I thought that was my stint. I wasn't going to run for office. Threw my hat in the ring, won my first election with 65% of the vote.
Oh, cool.
Was actually thinking of not running again, got convinced to run again. And here I am now serving in my second term as one of the senior members of our board.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, you've been involved in immigration reform, even on the local level. So talk to me about that. Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Well, here's what's interesting. I have office hours every Friday at Town Hall in Morrisville. And if you've ever been to Morrisville, please come. It's right in the center of the triangle near Cary and not too far from Raleigh. And my parents are from India. So I'm, as of today, the only Indian American elected official in Wake County. And one of the benefits of that is I get to meet a lot of Indian Americans and Asians across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to my, one of my top constituent requests over the last 3 years that I started to notice was technology workers, primarily in IT or biotech, that had H-1B-1 visas, that were doing innovation,
mm-hmm.
that were actually leaving to go back to India or other countries because they couldn't get the citizenship.
Right.
There's an entrepreneur named Vivek Vadva, who was one of the founders of a group called Thai.
Sure.
Thai Carolinas.
Indus entrepreneurs originally.
Yeah, and he's now at Singularity University and also Berkeley, and he's written a book called Immigrant Exodus. And the thesis of the book is that America's losing its innovative talent and entrepreneurship zeal to create jobs because we're not harnessing that global talent, and they're now going elsewhere to countries that have more favorable immigration policies. So that basically made me start exploring it, and that's when I came across the Partnership for the New Economy.
So tell us about the Partnership for the New Economy.
Well, the Partnership for the New Economy was actually founded by Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO of Disney and Boeing and four other CEOs joined him in his efforts because he was very passionate that we were losing our global talent. He saw this in New York City as the mayor for 12 years. And then today it's 500 CEOs and every mayor in the United States, all 50 states,
mm-hmm.
they have a mayor. But the primary thing with the partnership is focusing on the economic benefits of immigration reform, legal immigration reform.
Okay.
And that's what got me intrigued, was they've had so many data statistics that I've got on my steverau.com website on, you know, 40% of the Fortune 500 were founded by, you know, immigrants or foreign-born, you know, coming to the United States, from Google to Merck, Kraft, Colgate, DuPont, eBay, you know, some of the greatest companies in the world were founded by people that had a great idea, wanted to better their life, so they came to the United States with the best infrastructure and the best democracy and the best freedom and created wealth and created opportunity for all Americans. And so that's what really got me intrigued. And in different statistics, you know, in terms of, you know, 25% of all startups in Silicon Valley have, you know, someone from Asia as their founder. We have a lot of Asians and Indians in Cary and Morrisville and Triangle. And how do we leverage that for our own benefit to fill these jobs that we need to fill, to continue to invest in the local economy? So that's how I got interested.
So people that are maybe the detractors on this issue, they may be worried that we're taking jobs away from Americans.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an issue. I mean, first of all, I want to emphasize, you know, to anyone listening to the show, that I only support legal immigration. So I do not believe that if somebody crosses the border in Mexico, that they don't comply with the laws of this country, we can't let them in. What we're talking about is skilled workers that are here already innovating, mm-hmm. and we want them to do it in the United States of America and not go somewhere else. So I understand the fear, just like when it comes with outsourcing, you know, well, are you putting away American jobs? But at the end of the day, if we can pump more money and revenue into the economy, then people are going to be able to hire more.
That's right.
Number one. Mm-hmm. There's two. One of the reasons immigration is a tough issue is that you've got the STEM immigrants, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, which is science, technology, engineering, math. And those tend to
and
come
the
more.
Arts. And the STEM immigrants.
Yeah. But the engineering and the science come more from, you know, India or Asia or China. I mean, mm-hmm. like I often joke in Morrisville that we have more PhDs in Morrisville and Cary than probably anywhere in, not only the North Carolina, but anywhere in the United States. And many of them are from India and China, right?
Then you've got Boston's going to have a fight with you about that.
Boston. But then you've got Hispanic immigration, which is wonderful, but they tend to be a more lower income and they're doing more of the, you know, menial jobs, mm-hmm. but they are producing economic benefit to
Absolutely.
The country. It's hard to reconcile those issues, so it becomes much more politicized. And what I'm here today is to talk about the business and economic benefits
right.
of immigration as a policymaker in North Carolina.
So you brought some of the folks from the partnership to the new economy to the region recently, is that
yes,
true? Tell
yes.
us about that event.
Yes, it was a wonderful event. We had one of the managers, Dan Wallace from the partnership, and then Alex Norwaste from the Cato Institute. And then we had the CEO of BioResource International, Giles Shi, and Jack Pinnix from Pinnix and Ragland, which is a law firm. He's a big immigration lawyer.
Okay.
And the idea, what we really did was the partnership came out at this event and released some very interesting data that had never been heard before in North Carolina. It's now got a lot of people talking since I did this event. Just a couple, just to rat off, just a few, that if we passed immigration reform today and had a high visa skill program, we would add more than $745 million to the economy of North Carolina.
Of North Carolina?
Yeah, $745 wow. million. Dollars
wow.
That immigrant communities in North Carolina produce today about $1.6 billion of business growth. Wow. Today, there's 807,856,000 foreign-born immigrants, about 7% of North Carolina's population, with a majority of international communities in Morrisville and Cary, about 25% of Morrisville
wow.
is Indian immigrants. And that the foreign-born populations have grown by 63%. What's interesting is that 32% of the STEM research at our North Carolina universities, 32% of those graduates or PhDs are foreign-born or temporary residents.
Wow.
So just a couple of statistics of, well, and I get this question a lot, what does this have to do with me in North Carolina?
Right.
Why are you're a councilman. Why are you talking about immigration reform? Well,
right.
I often remind the people that hopefully one day I can become a congressman, but right now I'm just a councilman, so I can't get them a visa if they've lost it or a passport. But what I can do is use my position as an elected official to make progress with some of the Republicans in Congress that are concerned about it. You know, Renee Elmers has now changed her position. I spoke with her after this event. She was very excited about it. She's supporting it. Representative Cantor was, but he's out now. So I don't know whether the deal could be struck. But those are some of the things that came out of this event from the partnership.
So primarily it's awareness so that people understand the real impact that this can have.
The real impact, the real economic impact. And I mean, I think, you know, just to take my political hat off for a minute, I mean, I think it's exciting if you look at North Carolina and this region. We've in the Smarter Cities report, which was just issued about a year ago, Raleigh area came up three. And one of the reasons was we've created over 6,000 technology jobs in the last 3 years in this area.
Right. 6,000 jobs.
6,000. It's a lot of new IT jobs.
Okay.
But there's a 230,000 of STEM jobs that are going to be unfilled. Or STEAM jobs.
STEAM jobs.
And the United States system can't produce enough of those engineers right now. So this is really a matter of competitiveness. That,
yes.
You know, Richard Steritz at Small Footprint, Dr. Goodnight at SAS, the CEO of Red Hat, Jim Whitehurst, who I've talked to about this and is passionate about it. It's, you know, we can't fill these jobs through just relying on the educational system right now. I wish we could. So we're going to have to leverage the assets that we have here in order to compete globally. That's really what...
Fabulous.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
So this is a really... First of all, let me just wrap this section up by allowing you to tell people how they can learn more both about this and about alphanumerics. Can you give us both those websites?
Yes, yes. So if you go to steverau.com, there's a lot of information and blogs and stuff on my Facebook and Twitter to get this information. And then the townofmorrisville.org, there's a council site, and I've posted a lot of these presentations.
Excellent.
And for alphanumeric, just go to alphanumeric.com for our website. And the final thing I'll say is that I've been doing a lot of stuff around technology and innovation. So I've started with the chamber, worked with the team to start an entrepreneurship program for startups. I'm looking at a plan of maybe taking part of the Outlet Mall, which got bought by some investors to turn into Chinatown, of having part of that as a maker space, like an innovation center.
That's cool.
So I'm doing a lot of stuff in IT. And so I just want to once again thank the IT industry for being very supportive of me as a policymaker. And I'm one of you, so I'm doing what I can to make sure that people understand our perspective as we try to create more jobs.
Super. So we have now three people in the studio that are working diligently to make sure that we have well-educated professionals looking at a lot of innovation in North Carolina. How do you guys who are working mostly on the STEAM and the STEM and the education end feel about the H-1B-1 visa situation? Do we need more PhDs than we have right now? Do we need more innovators to come and help us?
So I think that from our perspective at SAS, yes, we could use quite a number of more PhDs than we have. Oftentimes, you'll hear Dr. Goodnight say that some of the positions will stay open for 2 years. So,
oh, my goodness.
You know, in some of the other discussions that we were having, if the jobs aren't being filled, they need to be filled regardless of who the talent is.
Right.
And I think that gap is going to continue to grow. So
yeah.
It is going to be something that's going to affect a lot of businesses, and even not even at the PhD level, but just
sure.
having some of the skills that Patrick, you were talking about.
Yeah, and I really, you know, listening to Steve, it's a really exciting story, and I've certainly heard a lot of the same statistics. And it really comes down to awareness from my perspective. I think there's a lot of opportunities for kids and adults, and whether they're first or second careers around North Carolina to learn the skills that are needed to get into the industry. And you heard both Steve and I had a lot of statistics around just what the opportunities are.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that we should all realize is these opportunities have existed here for years. So the jobs that have been created in technology, the opportunity that exists here is only going to continue. And really, what drives the U.S. economy, you know, piggybacking off of what Steve says, is innovations.
Absolutely.
And the only way that we can accelerate innovation is to have those skilled people here in the U.S. driving that innovation. And from my perspective, it doesn't really matter where they come from or what their background is. It's just a matter of them having obtaining the skills they need or utilizing the skills that they've gained to drive that innovation and then drive our economy, because we are certainly a technology-driven economy.
Absolutely.
We always have been, and it's only growing.
Well, given that awareness is a really critical component of the success of everybody's programs, I want to encourage everyone who's listening today to share this program with as many people as they can, because I think there's a lot of great data, a lot of good speakers, and I want to thank all of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, for Carolina Connections, this is Anne Ravel-Petcher.